At a time when investors are confronted with market volatility and a variety of challenges fueled by the uncertainty of inflation, unsettled geopolitical tensions, and economic pressures, Justin Klein and Steve Peasley stand ready to take your finance and investment questions and share their unbiased answers. This is InvestTalk, independent thinking, shared success. InvestTalk is made possible by KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm serving clients throughout the United States. The clarity for your path forward starts now. Here is KPP Chief Executive Officer, Financial Advisor, Justin Klein.
Good afternoon, fellow investors, and welcome back to InvestTalk. This is our Wednesday, April 17th, 2024 edition. I am Justin Klein, and our objective here is the same as always, is to help you navigate this new world, this new environment of fiscal dominance, where the risk of inflation is, frankly, even more important than the risk of a deflationary bust like 08. And it's a new regime, it's a new environment that most people are not used to. People still have PTSD, and our job is to help shake you of that PTSD and help you understand the facts that are happening on the ground from a macro perspective, broader economy, government spending, etc., as well as a micro perspective, meaning what's happening with individual companies, with individual sectors and asset classes. And so this is what we cover each and every day on this show, a little bit of everything, but mainly it's about getting you in the right mindset. So you're not running after the dog whistles that are everywhere, which are headlines and social media posts that are grandiose and can often be fear-mongering and takes your mind off of the reality of what is happening in markets, in economies, because that's most important. It's not about where you hope the market will be, or hope the economy will be, or hope the political environment will trend towards. That does not matter. What matters is what will and what is happening. Okay. And that is our goal here. And when it comes to making good decisions with your money, that is what your goal should be, is to build the right mindset, to avoid mistakes, avoid the pitfalls that so many people fall prey to due to their emotions of being just a human being, and focus on the opportunities that are out there, because there are many opportunities. There are a lot of opportunities. There are always opportunities in markets. It's just a matter of looking in the right place, under the right rock. And our job is to help you identify those rocks to look under. But it's up to you to pick up that rock and grab that opportunity. So that's what today's market is about, or today's show is about. And with that said, I want to pivot over to our Market Madness contest, and we do have a winner. Let me pull it up here. I just shut down my email, and I had a name. Give me a second. Our original winner, let's say this, our original winner didn't respond. And so we actually, in the rules, you have 7 days to respond. And we were giving it to the second place winner. There we go. Got it. It is Richard Leneve. He is our winner out of Strongsville, Ohio. Strongsville, Ohio. Congratulations. We will be getting a check to you later this week. You are the grand prize winner in our inaugural InvestTalk Market Madness contest. Now, with that said, we'll talk about today's market performance in just a bit and run down some show topics, but right after, we'll answer our first caller question now.
Hey, Justin, Luke. It's John from Georgia. I was just wondering what you guys thought about Lululemon. I know it's been falling for a while. I was wondering what a good price point would be to pick it up, or if it's even worth picking up. Thank you for everything.
All right, looking at Lululemon Athletica. And this is a name that is down pretty nicely from its 52-week high, down 33%. It's down a third in just a handful of months. And that's because analysts' expectations going forward have been coming down pretty dramatically, and growth has been coming down. No dividend yield, which is fine with me because it is a very good business, but it's always traded at a bit of a premium, and that makes sense. They have a very quality business. It's okay to pay a premium for such a great business. Return on equity, 43%. So I love what he's looking at. Quality. He's not chasing a dividend. He's looking at quality businesses that are a bit down on their luck. Now, from on a weekly chart perspective, it's in a support right here around 330. So I will say that. Net cash on its balance sheet, so no debt. I love that. Enterprise value to EBITDA right now is at about 15.5. And that is near the low end of its longer-term average. So I actually think this is a good place to be picking up Lululemon. Now, that doesn't mean it can't continue to go down a bit more. The technicals near-term are not amazing. It's getting a bit of a bounce yesterday and today, but that's just 2 days after such a poor move or a poor showing after earnings. It was at 480 after earnings, went down to about $400 per share. And like I said, now around 344. So from a fundamental standpoint, it looks solid. From a technical standpoint, it's at support, but that doesn't mean that support can't be broken. But this would be a place where I might start my position, but maybe not buy the whole thing. Okay. Thanks for the call. Now we're going into a short break on the other side. We'll talk about the planned topics for today's show, as well as the market activity. And please remember that you can call anytime and leave your questions on the InvestTalk Voice Bank. If you're listening via our live stream or an AM 1220 radio in the Silicon Valley area, you can call right now at 888-99-CHART.
InvestTalk callers make each podcast unique.
I was calling about Intel, if it's worth holding on to, or should I sell it?
Their questions are curious.
I have saved up around $80,000, and I was wondering what I should do to make it grow.
Careful.
So I'm just wondering, is this a value trap? Because it looks like it's gone down quite a bit.
Concerned.
It's taken quite the tumble today. I've been trying to get out of this position for a while. I think I waited too long.
And clever.
Looking at Dominion Energy, Inc., does seem to be situated in some areas of expanding population.
And Justin Klein and now Luke Guerrero are always ready with their unbiased answers.
And this is, it looks like a classic example of chasing yield. Don't chase the yield.
Next 12 months price to earnings is around 30. I just don't see it at this price.
Don't forget to call InvestTalk 888-99-CHART. This is InvestTalk. Is your portfolio balanced? Is it optimized? Is it delivering the types of gains you want and need to achieve financial freedom? Well, turn up the volume because there are many questions that deserve unbiased answers. And Justin Klein is here now, ready to take your calls live. 888-99-CHART.
Now, we have a lot of ground to cover over the next 45 minutes, and my main focus point concerns a story set up by this headline, 15 stocks that have destroyed the most wealth over the past decade. And I love this article because it really shows how companies across many industries can lose value for their shareholders for many reasons. And we're going to talk about a lot of these and the lessons that can be gleaned from these poor performers over the past decade. Also, I want to touch a bit on AI and how, yes, it's going to consume a lot more power. That is a trend that's going to shape our economies, especially the industrial economy, for, I think, years to come. There's a report that the average AI search consumes 10 times more electricity than the average Google search. And so how will that impact the demand for energy? We're going to discuss that and also how it could potentially help save energy as well. So, you know, with all things, there's two sides to it, and we're going to look at both sides. Also, there's antitrust, new antitrust lawsuit against Live Nation. Live Nation, and I think this is one of those ones that could easily win. That's why Live Nation was down big yesterday, and frankly, it was down a little bit more today. So we're going to unpack that story. And then if we have time, what is, when people fearmonger, they often fearmonger about things that people know about. The reason 08 happened is because people weren't paying attention to CDOs and their leverage and the poor lending within the mortgage space. But in today's world, regulators, investors, they have PTSD, as I said at the top of the show. And so there are parts of the financial system that maybe are overlooked. And that's where the real risk comes from. So we're going to look at where the potential problems with the global financial system are. And frankly, they're not where the average person is looking. Okay. So that's what's on the docket for us. We also have voice bank questions in regards to bank resources, also Vanguard Total Stock Market Index, as well as some questions from our YouTube channel. And of course, I welcome your finance and investment questions now at 888-99-CHART. Now let's take a look at the market today. It was another negative day overall. The S&P was down. It was down 29 points, mainly on the growth side of the market. Small cap growth down 1.09%. Mid cap growth down 1.15%. Mid cap value was actually up slightly. Large cap growth down 0.69%. Tesla was down a little over 1%. That continues its weakness. AMD down 5.7%. You're definitely seeing some weakness creep into the semiconductors. Nvidia down nearly 4%. Pfizer down another 1%. What were some big gainers? United Airlines was up 17%. What else? Yeah, the airlines, they had good earnings. But overall, you continue with this market pullback. And it is something... kind of said at the start of the year was we're expecting softness in the back half of the first quarter, early second quarter. And frankly, we didn't get that in the back half of the first quarter. We got it pretty much at the start of this second quarter. And, you know, we're getting into potential support on the S&P. The first major support level is going to be right here around $4,973, or points, shall we say. Right now, the S&P closed at 5,022. So about 1% from here is the first major support level. And then the next major support level will be down around 4,821. So that's another, you know, 5-6% from here. So, you know, I think that's possible. And frankly, that wouldn't be out of the ordinary. It would just be a normal market pullback in the midst of a long uptrend. I say this many times, and I have to beat it home. Because so many people look at times like this and they start to get all nervous and those emotions creep in, that fear. But if you back up and you say, in any given year, the average pullback is 10%. So that means you should always expect from any given point, the market to drop 10% in relatively short period of time. It can happen in a month or two. And that's what you're likely seeing now. So far, it's been a drop of... yeah, about 5%. So do we get to 6%? Do we get to 10-12% potentially? But overall, the credit markets are holding in. We're in the world of fiscal dominance, as I said at the top of the show, and that makes it very difficult to have a major drawdown in equities that is fundamentally related because earnings are not amazing, but they're still growing. And so I think this is a pullback that you don't want to get too bearish on. And frankly, it's needed. It's healthy when you get these modest pullbacks. Now we're moving into a break. Still to come in this podcast, I'll tackle a YouTube comment question and your voice bank calls. So stay with me. but give us a call at 888-99-CHART.
Every investor is working to build a secure financial future. How they get there and when they get there, that depends on many variables. The more you learn about how the market works, the better your chances. So don't forget to call InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
Now, my main talking point today is about, or main focus point today is about 15 stocks that destroyed the most wealth over the past decade. And there are some lessons here for you to learn. And, you know, those that destroy value don't typically destroy as much as those that create value. Meaning when you have a good business and you create value over time, you know, you can go up many multiples of an investment. But when you go down, you can just go down 100%. That's it. But the odds of experiencing a loss on any in one individual stock over a 10-year period is actually relatively high. The value in the equity markets are typically concentrated in the upper 20, 30 names. And so it's very easy to get caught up into names that destroy value. And a lot of them are some very large companies that you would recognize. Okay. And I'll list off a few. Now, the biggest was GE. Like GE, yes, it's rallied as of late, but it's still down significantly from its all-time high. And, you know, it's issued a lot of shares over that time. And Biogen IDEC is the second. Las Vegas Sands, Walgreens Boots Alliance is fourth. And then Paramount Global is fifth. So those are the top five. And, you know, there are some lessons that to be gleaned from many of these. Now, the first is that acquisitions often fail to create shareholder value. This is where I see probably the biggest or the easiest way for large companies to run astray is they have a good business. Their growth may be slowing. They may have some challenges and they think that an acquisition will pull them out of their spiral. That an acquisition is the key to unlocking the potential of the capital that they have. And sometimes that can be true, but very often it disrupts the ethos of the company, the culture that a company has built over many years. And it can take them away from focusing on the core business that has allowed them to get so big. And on top of that, they often chase the shiny object, meaning they buy into fads and chase the company that has good revenue growth, much better than theirs, maybe doesn't have as much profitability, is still much smaller than them. And they think they can, you know, they want exposure. They can't build that exposure to that shiny object, that shiny part of the sector that's doing well. And so they go out there and they purchase that. And so this happened with, I think, AOL Time Warner is a good example that kind of sinked them. Now on this list, GE is one of those where they had a sprawling portfolio of businesses across different areas. And it created too much complexity and lack of focus. And that led to a lot of their downfall. And they're unwinding it and the stock's done much better. But the point here is that bad acquisitions can really take down a great business. Also, failure to keep up with changing consumer preferences. So one on this list is Paramount Global. They abandoned traditional television in favor of streaming services. And it kind of sank them. I'm sorry, viewers, they weren't ahead of the streaming change. And so they didn't pivot fast enough and they were kind of late to the game in the streaming business and they didn't adjust to those changes. Walgreens Boots Alliance, the big lesson there, number one, is debt. They have way too much debt on their balance sheet. And so they weren't able to reinvest in their business. They were more focused on paying interest and avoiding bankruptcy. And they didn't pivot to online services for prescriptions and other products. So that's what really sank them. Third is failure of risk management. Citigroup is on this list, and they are historically one of the worst run banks out there. And so management is always a huge risk, and they can run you astray. And then there's external factors. Sometimes they are out of their control. For example, there's an oil service name on this list, Schlumberger. It's a good business, but they were just in an industry that was too challenging. It was 10 years ago, oil prices were very high, 2014, and then they fell between 2014 and 2016, and that took a heavy toll on revenue and profitability. So sometimes these are out of the control. It's just up to what happens in the broader sector. And then the last one is lack of development of new products. So Biogen IDEC is a good example of this. They weren't able to diversify away from their multiple sclerosis drugs. And a lot of the drug development they've been working on has just stalled out. Okay. And so these are some great lessons to why companies tend to fail. And to look ahead, make sure that when you're purchasing a new company, that you have these potential risks in mind, that, have they made a recent acquisition that could be overvalued or not execute properly? What's the management look like? Are they ahead of the trends in their particular industry, et cetera? And that is part of the analysis when you are buying any individual company, not just the shiny name, the name that has done well over the past 3-6 months or whatever. It's really about the quality of the business and the trajectory of that business, not just that it's good today, but that it'll be good in the future. All right. On the next Invest Talk, we'll look at the story. Do you check your financial health enough? That's tomorrow. But for now, I'm Justin Klein, ready to take your calls at 888-99-CHART.
Let's say you've been thinking about learning a new language. Okay. Why? I mean, how would it come in handy? And where would you want to use it? Could it be that you have an upcoming international trip? Or maybe you want to connect with family members or friends from a different culture? I think you should know about Rosetta Stone. With millions of users, it's been the world's most trusted language learning program for 30 years. Rosetta Stone is available on your desktop or as an app with audio companion and the ability to download lessons offline. Rosetta Stone truly immerses you in the language you want to learn. It has a built-in, patented speech recognition engine called True Accent. So as you practice speaking, you'll get feedback on how well you pronounce words. With Rosetta Stone, you pick up a language naturally, first with words, then phrases, then sentences. It's an intuitive process designed for long-term retention. You really learn to speak, listen, and think in your new language. Rosetta Stone is an amazing value, so your special skill set is within easy reach. You know you want to do this, so don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, InvestTalk listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/today. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off now at rosettastone.com/today.
InvestTalk is here to help. And when you download the free InvestTalk podcasts, don't forget to rate and review. The phone lines are open, 888-99-CHART.
Hello, I had a question about the resources regarding banks when you're looking for stocks. So currently I have an account with Schwab, and you know they offer pretty good resources. I can put the name of the ticker symbol or the company, and they'll provide me with data both from their perspective, from Morningstar's perspective, CFRA's perspective, and I get to see the reports and sort of understand the companies before purchasing. But then I started thinking, what about some of these other companies? I opened up another investment account, a much smaller one from JP Morgan, and I started looking at their research. And I was just wondering, are there any investment accounts with different banks that you would recommend, maybe Fidelity or Citibank, just something that may offer good resources? I do like what they offer at Schwab. I'm not too content with the information that's provided with JP Morgan, but if you have some recommendations on possibly using other banks' resources, I would greatly appreciate it. Thank you, and I hope Steve does well.
Well, you're looking at different brokers. I think that's what you're speaking about, not necessarily banks. And banks, you know, you can open investment accounts through banks, but the best resources, as you're talking about, which are really investment tools, right? Investment data, things that we're showing on our YouTube channel when we're analyzing stocks. And so we use Schwab, but we purchase a lot of things like FactSet and Y Charts and many others that give us a lot more data than you're ever going to get free from a broker like Schwab or Fidelity. Now, Schwab bought TD Ameritrade recently. They do have the Think or Swim platform. I would recommend opting for that. That's a great tool as well for research. Fidelity has some good research, but I think Schwab and Fidelity are the top two. But it's really how you use it, what you feel comfortable using, and the UI. That's why Thinkorswim, a lot of people like Thinkorswim, just from a research and trading platform. So I think those are the two best ones. If you go with a big bank like JP Morgan, you're probably not going to get much. It's going to likely be Schwab or Fidelity. Thanks for the call. Now let's touch a bit on AI and AI's energy demands. A simple ChatGPT request used nearly 10 times more electricity than a regular Google search. That's according to the International Energy Agency. And chip designer Arm warns that unless energy savings are found, AI data centers could consume up to 25% of America's power by 2030. 2030, that's only 6 years from now, compared to just 4% today. And so the question is, how do you deal with that? Now, first is, obviously, we know there's going to be a lot more energy demand. We're already investing for our clients to take advantage of that. And that's definitely a trend you need to be thinking about. Allocating towards is that extra demand that AI is going to put on our energy grid. But AI can also be used as a tool to find energy savings as well. And real estate is the place that has the most room for improvement. Real estate is a heavy and wasteful user of energy. According to the IEA, the operations of residential and commercial buildings account for 30% of global energy use, and about a third of that is squandered, meaning, you know, air conditionings that are ran when they don't need to be, heaters that are ran when they don't need to be, lights being on when nobody's in the room, etc. And so these things can be potentially solved by AI. And there's even more wastefulness than pre-pandemic, because so many people are not going into the office and people don't have every day the same pattern of behavior, meaning they don't all go into the office at 8 a.m. anymore and leave at 5 p.m. A lot of hybrid work environments. Sometimes you come in maybe Tuesday and Thursday. Other weeks might be Monday and Wednesday. All depends, right? And so there are companies out there that are looking for ways of deploying tools that are helping buildings become more energy efficient. And efficiency is underrated. In fact, over the past decade, this is from the Saudi Aramco CEO. He says, pointed out that efficiencies reduce global energy demand by 90 million barrels of oil equivalent a day over the past 15 years. Okay, 90 million barrels. Now, the contributions from wind and solar energy itself to the grid of clean energy has substituted just 15 million barrels a day over that same time period. So what it's saying is, hey, we can talk about the investment in green energy and just the energy infrastructure in general, but the lowest hanging fruit is actually just efficiency. And AI can potentially help with that. Learning the patterns of people to make sure that air conditioners and heaters are turned off and on at the right time, that lights are turned off and on at the right time. And all of this can make the world more efficient. And there are companies that are actually helping with this. Companies like Siemens, ABB, Schneider Electric, etc. So there's a lot out there to think about. And that's why I always say there's two sides of every coin, supply and demand. And this is the same thing. It's not just about creating more supply, but also reducing the demand. And that's what, and both can be tools that will help solve our energy crisis worldwide. Now, I hope you will tell your friends about our new InvestTalk audio podcast is also expanding into video form on our YouTube channel. It seems that every day now we receive finance and investment questions in the comment section over there on the YouTube channel. So let's get to a couple now. Finite Anarchy says, do you think energy stocks are going to continue ticking higher with inflation and the combination of spring and summer months entering the traditional time period of high gas prices? I don't think that it's going to be something that is seasonal. The global energy flows are going to be are more dynamic than that these days. And I do think energy prices will continue to tick higher and put pressure on inflation, mainly because of lack of real long-term investment in big projects for oil production. Most of the incremental demand is, or incremental supply, excuse me, is coming from the shale regions. And that takes continued investment in those wells, in putting more holes in the ground, because the shelf life of each well is a lot shorter in the shale regions than your traditional oil plays. And so you also have the geopolitical problems. And so I do think energy stocks will continue to head higher. Energy prices will continue to head higher. They'll still be volatile. It doesn't mean they can't pull back. You know, oil is around 90 now. Can it pull back to 75? Absolutely. But you know, the general trends across the board are for a lot of demand for energy, both because of AI, because of reshoring and manufacturing, but also the emerging markets. They are still growing their demand for cars and the modern comforts that we all enjoy in the first world. And so those things are not going to change. So we're still bullish on energy prices. Let's go to answer another InvestTalk YouTube channel question. Kevin White says, one of the last persistent components of inflation today is wage inflation. Do you think the global energy prices could reinforce that persistence? If so, wouldn't it create an inevitable scenario of higher unemployment? Not necessarily. Just because energy prices go up doesn't mean that companies are going to lay off workers. Companies usually lay off workers for a couple of reasons. One is shrinking profits. Certainly higher energy prices can do that. But finding efficiencies is usually a better way to deal with that in operations. And you typically need people for that. But the main reason that most companies lay off workers is when they get into deeper financial problems. Nobody wants to lay off workers. And it's really about, you know, can they finance themselves? Can they get lending from banks? Can they issue bonds, et cetera? And if they can't, that's when they truly lay off in large numbers. That I don't see happening because the credit markets are pretty solid. Inflation generally is, frankly, a good thing for corporations. As long as it's moderate, you know, 3 to 5% range, we don't get back up to 7, 8% where the Fed has to really hammer on liquidity, then I don't see an inevitable that higher oil prices or energy prices are going to create higher unemployment. You're seeing that as of late. Oil prices are on the rise, but the jobs market is hanging in there. In 2022, oil prices were headed higher, and unemployment continued to trend lower. So they're not really that correlated, and I wouldn't take it as such. Now let's keep things moving and pivot back to the InvestTalk Voice Bank for this question that came in earlier on 888-99-CHART.
Hey, Luke and InvestTalk. I'm calling about index funds. I'm trying to set up a passive strategy. I know nothing is set it and forget it, but the most set it and forget it I can possibly do right now with a index fund strategy, kind of, you know, next 25, 30 years, dump X amount each year into it and not even have to worry about it. And I'm looking at VTI, VTV, and VOO, all Vanguard index funds. All pretty low expense ratios, pretty consistent growth over the last, you know, 30, 40 years. And wanted to get your thoughts of which one you think would be the most beneficial for that time frame of consistency of growth with more limited down side. Looking forward to hearing your thoughts and love what you do. Thanks so much.
No problem. Thanks for the call. Now looking at three very popular index funds, you have VTI and VOO. VTI is the Vanguard Total Stock Market Index, and VOO is the S&P 500 index. And as you would imagine, the VTI is a bit more broad-based. I forgot the exact number, but I think it's up around 2,000, 2,500 different names. So much more broad-based, rate-based and diversified. And so if I'm picking that between VOO and VTI, I'm picking VTI. But you also mentioned VTV, which is the Vanguard Value ETF. And that one, I think, has a much better makeup. Obviously, we are value investors, and this is more of a large cap value ETF versus the other two are more large cap growth ETFs. They lean on the growth side because they're heavily weighted, their market cap weighted towards those mega cap names that in some instances are pretty overvalued. So I would go with the VTV over those three. Now, is VTV perfect? No, it is not. It's still only 2.5% in basic materials. It's still only 7% in energy. I think those are drastically too low in allocation. So I would probably augment it with something that has a little more hard asset exposure, basic materials, energy, industrials at 13% for this one. That's good. I would probably want to up that a bit. So it's an improvement over VTI and VOO, but it is not perfect. But of the three, that's the best one. Now let's talk a little bit about Live Nation. Live Nation. And this is a report that the Justice Department is preparing to sue Live Nation next month in an antitrust challenge. And I think this is by far the one that has the most potential to actually go through. And it's alleging that the nation's biggest concert promoter has leveraged its dominance in a way that undermines competition for ticketing live events. And the government opted to not block the Live Nation and Ticketmaster merger in 2010. And it looks like that was a huge mistake. Now, this has gained momentum since November of 2022 during the Taylor Swift's Eras Tour when Ticketmaster crashed during fan pre-sales. Ticket prices went crazy. And really, they just charge exorbitant fees. And they also, what's come out that what they do is they have these third-party vendors that they bring into these venues, and they negotiate separately with the third party. And they tell the venue that they have these vendors, and you use these vendors, and it makes it look like the fees that they're charging is just the only way they're making money. Well, in reality, they actually get kickbacks from these vendors. And so they're using their monopoly power in order to squeeze more profits out of each event. They prevent companies from going in there and using, or live acts from using, other ticket vendors such that aren't Ticketmaster. And if they do, then the venue may not get the next big large act that Ticketmaster maybe has control of. And so it now holds more than Ticketmaster holds 80% market share of primary ticket sales in the biggest venues in the US, and they have exclusive ticketing contracts with many of the big stadiums, arenas, where these high profile acts perform, where, you know, they have to perform there because they're bringing in 20, 30, 40, 50,000 people. And there's only so many venues that can handle that many people. And so there's a lawsuit, and it may unravel a settlement agreement that Live Nation reached with the department in 2010. So I think this is a very, very strong possibility of being broken up. And frankly, I think it's a good thing because they're definitely using that monopoly power. Well, this is Invest Talk. I'm Justin Klein. We have one goal each and every weekday, and that's to help you achieve your own version of financial freedom. And our work continues after this final break. So if you're going to call, you want to do that right now at 888-99-CHART.
Everybody wants a secure financial future, but getting there takes strategy, discipline, and the right information. That means you'll have finance and investment questions. So don't forget to call InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
Hi, Steve and Justin. Recently, Justin was talking about the put call ratio, giving us an idea of investor sentiment. I'm wondering, how does that really give us an idea of what investor community is thinking, really? Because when people are buying a lot of puts and the put call ratio is high, aren't there an equal number of people also selling those puts? So, you know, for every one person that is buying the put and thinking the stock market is going lower, there's another person selling it. So those people are bullish on the stock market as a whole. I understand the idea, but for every person buying those puts, there's someone selling them and feels the opposite way. Maybe you can talk a little bit about that on the show. I appreciate it. Thank you.
All right. Great question. But you're thinking about this ratio a bit wrong. You're right that for every person that buys a put, someone has to sell it. But this is a ratio of puts to calls, put to call ratio. So there's the what's called open interest in puts and calls. And so when a certain number of puts or more puts are being bought than calls, then remember, these can be created out of thin air. It's just based on supply and demand. More people want to put in bid orders and enough people want to sell. And that creates the open interest and the number of calls and puts that are executed. And so when the put call ratio goes up dramatically, it means a lot of people are buying puts for protection and not a lot of people are buying calls for upside potential gain. So that's what the ratio is. Yes, there's always an equal number of people that are buying puts and calls at any given time because that's how these instruments work. But it's a put call ratio, Okay. So hopefully it gives you a little clarity. Now, I don't think the put-call ratio is the best way to go, best sentiment indicator. I think the AAII Investor Sentiment Survey is a bit better. It is looking a bit hefty, I will say, as of late. So that is a bit of a worry. But once again, it is not the end-all be-all. It can always remain over-allocated for a long period of time before a catalyst that really pushes them into sell mode. So it's helpful, but once again, it's not the end all be all. And, you know, if you want to time the market, good luck. Okay. Now let's pivot over to one more question before we finish the day.
Hello, InvestTalk. I would like to know your opinion about ticker symbol WTI, W and T offshore. It's in the natural gas and oil business, and it's been on a decline for the last year. I would like to know what's your opinion on it. Looking forward, I see that cash flow is positive. And my question is, how do you see this going forward? Do you see light at the end of the tunnel, or this company is just on a slow grind down? Thank you.
All right, this is WTI, which is W&T Offshore Inc. And this is in a terrible downtrend. Its relative strength is only 10. It's supposed to lose money this year and next year. It lost money last year as well. Revenues were down 30% last quarter, year over year. Earnings were down 160% last quarter year over year. It does pay a dividend, but that dividend is probably going away. It has a lot of debt on its balance sheet. And what it does, it's an E&P company, but primarily in the Gulf of Mexico, offshore. And it's pretty clear that based on the current market prices of oil, they're not very profitable. And it's very expensive to shut down these oil rigs that are out there in the middle of the ocean. And so they typically pump no matter what. And that can be good when oil prices really spike. But when oil prices are kind of middling and they're not really that profitable, they don't really have a lot of reason to shut it down because they're hoping for a potential turnaround in prices. Overall, I just don't see the value here. Too much debt. I'd rather own a company that's a lot more diversified, has a much better business. Don't be trying to pick the bottom here because this looks like a name that's more likely to go bankrupt than double from here. So I would absolutely pass on W&T Offshore. Well, that does it. I'm Justin Klein. This completes another Invest Talk program. We thank you for listening. We encourage you to tell your friends and family about our free podcast downloads, which you can find anytime at iTunes, Spotify, or Google Play. And be sure to tell your friends that the Invest Talk podcast is now available in video form on our YouTube channel. Search Invest Talk with two T's. And yes, we had a Market Madness contest winner. We sent the email notification out, and we'll be sending out a check later this week. Independent thinking, shared success. This is Invest Talk. Good night.
Invest Talk is a trademark of KPP Financial. Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for the listener to understand that not all comments made will apply to them. Specifically, nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell security. Because such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis, and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor firm, which retains all rights. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. Steve Peasley is president, and Justin Klein is chief executive officer of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial. Thank you for listening, and your comments and questions are welcome on our 24-hour listener line at 888-99-CHART.
Today, we unpack the 15 companies that have destroyed the most value over the last decade, and if Lululemon is a good buy after this most recent drop. Lululemon is down 33% from its recent high. Is it a buy yet? Let's find out. Now, which Vanguard index fund is the right buy long term?